Hello and welcome to the Mejlis Podcast, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's current affairs talk show focusing on Central Asia. I'm Bruce Pinier, host of the Mejlis and author of the weekly Central Asia in Focus newsletter. On April 6th, Uzbekistan's Senate, the upper house of parliament, approved a draft law that criminalizes domestic violence and strengthens protection for women and children. It was long overdue as the problem of gender-based violence is growing worse in Uzbekistan. And it was not an easy task. Many people were involved in pushing for stronger legislation and helping to identify the areas that needed attention, following the progress of the document as it made its way through parliament, and all during that time spreading the word to the public about the need for these changes. To discuss this, I am joined by two people at the moment, and hopefully a third later, who played huge roles in preparing this legislation and guiding it through government channels. Nazima Davletova is the chairperson of Uzbekistan's Mass Media Foundation and consultant on public and social sector. And Irina Matvienko is a gender expert, feminist activist, and founder of Nemolchi.uz, an organization dedicated to ending gender violence and promoting gender equality. And thank you both for being on the show. And Nazima, if I could start with you, can you give me an idea of some of the changes this bill introduces? What will change once this becomes law? And not obviously everything, because I want Irina to have a chance to speak about it too. And I know there's a lot of changes, but can you give me some of the big changes that will come?
Yeah, for me, of course, the biggest change was the criminalization of domestic violence. And it's not just a legal norm, but I think this is a huge blow against the conservative and traditionalist norms, which is, a huge achievement. Another one, we have increased the penalties for the sexualized crimes against minors. For this also, we had a huge resistance. And I think that also this is a great achievement in terms that we are acting towards more safer environment for children and for women. And of course, in the course of the current, highlights in media about violence against minors, this was very timely. Actually, we had, those cases of violence every time. But now, due to media activities, due to the work of the media, we are hearing them, loudly. So that this is a huge argument for these amendments. And I think that these amendments actually were long awaited. So we are finally here. So basically, I think that these two directions were important for us to increase the penalties against those crimes, because in the existing version, it's too mild, let's say. And this is not a message for perpetrators, for aggressors, for rapists, that they cannot avoid the real penalty. So, and maybe Dilfuza or Irina could talk about the details of the essence of those amendments. But I can talk more about the social impact that these norms can have.
Okay, thank you. And we'll get to that in just a second. But I will, in fact, first I want to introduce Dilfuza Kurolova, who has just joined us, and she is a human rights lawyer and activist for gender equality, and she's from Uzbekistan. And first, let me go to Irina here. Irina, can you follow up on what Nazima was saying? Can you give us some more details about these amendments?
Well, it's quite difficult to give you more details because we haven't seen this project of law yet. Of course, we discussed a lot of amendments in it, and as I know, it has to be quite progressive. But I don't know. For example, what were the latest amendments in this law? But as Nazima told, we know that the punishment for domestic violence will be introduced, as well as the punishment for sexual crimes towards minors will be increased too. That's all.
That's okay. Dilfuza, can you give us a few more details? I mean, this raises the age of what constitutes a minor in the country, right? I mean, it was, I'd heard earlier, legislation said 16, and now it went up to 18, didn't it?
Hi to everyone. Thank you so much for inviting. Yeah, as Irina mentioned as well, so now the age is raising, but it's also demolishing the consent-based sex. Let's say if you didn't know, I mean, the perpetrator didn't know the age, it doesn't matter for the court anymore. And they don't need to, you know, if they're a minor, then they don't even have a right to ask a consent. Another part of the law that was adopted yesterday or April 6th is about not only the punishment, but also provides the punishment for not finished crimes as well. Because as you know, that now current legislation provides more easier punishment for crimes that has not been finished. They started but not finished. But now anything regarding the sexualized violence, even if it's not finished crimes, there will be anyway harsh punishment for that. Also, sexual harassment is one of the administrative offenses that has never been before. And there were many cases at workplaces especially. And of course, the colleagues mentioned about the domestic violence as one of the administrative and criminal crimes admitted there.
Okay, thank you. Irina, I want to get back to you for a second, but I'll follow up and get some comments from you on this, Dilfuza. Of course, you're all well acquainted with the, with this horrible story coming out of Khwarezm from the orphanage out there. And I know that, that Irina, your organization reported on this extensively too, in Nemolchi Daduz. What the new law, if this law, once this law comes into effect, what would be different about the way that case was handled? And for the benefit of the audience who might not know the story, there was three underage girls in the orphanage who were essentially made to engage in sexual relations with two local officials, and the head of the orphanage actually knew about it. This was going on for several months. The head of the orphanage ended up getting 5.5 years, I think, in prison, or 6.5 years. But the two officials didn't really receive any punishment at all. They were essentially given the equivalent of house arrest. So, Irina, under the new laws, how would that case be handled different?
I'm not sure if they can, if it's possible to handle this case in terms of new law, because, you know, this happened 2 years ago. Yes, almost 2 years ago. So it's impossible to apply a new law to this case. But I think, I suppose, of course, that in case of a new investigation of this case, they can maybe just look at this case as a rape case in terms of 118 article. So it has to be punishment about 10 years, maybe. I don't know yet. Dilfuz, do you know?
Yeah, I actually can. Yeah, that's true. I just had a comment that actually Irina has been referring to this case earlier during the discussions of this draft law. And actually, we referred to the problem in practice. And that's why we decided to suggest this increase in punishment in the Article 128, because 128, it's the article for sexual intercourse with minor. And the article that Irina is referring about the rape of a minor is 118. So in practice, you know, these articles can be easily replaced. So even in cases when you can find evidence for rape and for enforcement, they can be easily reviewed or revised as Article 128 as the sexual intercourse without any enforcement. So this is the problem of practice. And that's why we were actually, you know, trying to change these norms to increase the punishment for this article, to get rid of those loopholes that allow the criminals to avoid the real punishment.
If I may add here just a practical thing, Irina shared if it's in the case of minors, it has to be 118 part 3, that is for imprisonment of 10 to 15 years old. But I would like to say two things. One is the law is not retroactive. So if the case is happening right now, then harsher punishment or new law cannot be applied. So this is a rule in many legal countries. So this is a principle of criminal justice. And this new law can be applicable only in new investigations or in new cases, but not the cases that is currently reviewing in the process right now. The second thing is about using the more harsh punishment than lighter. So in case if the law is adopted and it has this for the same crime, harsh punishment, then it cannot be used. But if there is new investigation and it's done according to new law, then harsh punishment can be applied. So the point is that in the case of Khwarezm right now, even if tomorrow law adopts, the court cannot use it because the process is ongoing. But if the process is not started and new investigation will start after the adoption of the law, then new law adopted will be applied in the investigation, and then it can be used for the judgments and the punishment. I hope it's clear and not confusing.
No, that is. Thank you very much. And I was just wondering if, in that case, understanding that you can't retry somebody on charges they've already been tried on once, that's what I wanted to clarify. If a similar case, and hopefully it won't, but if a similar case came up a year from now after this law was already passed, we were talking about loopholes. Would that be enough of a guarantee that local officials would not get Uslovna punishment? Like I said, they were basically put under kind of house arrest. They couldn't leave the country or anything like that, but they didn't do any prison time. So would this new law in a similar situation help to prevent these kind of rulings from being given by a court then?
I think surely it will be, because it's also giving more harsher punishment, and any minor is protected. So you don't have to ask any kind of permission. You don't have to say that, oh, I didn't know the age or and et cetera. So this is like absolutely be giving more punishment for same deeds. But of course, it's really much related to the investigation, how it's going on. And if you have fair enough investigators and good enough prosecutors, then I think even in Khwarezm case, they could ask for more charges. But again, it is depending on crimes committed. It is depending when it has happened and evidences they collect. But I think and hope that this adopting new law will give more harsh punishment for perpetrators, especially those who are in power.
Okay. Thank you for clarifying all that. Nazima, I'll go to you because you wanted to talk about some of the social aspects of this, but I'm real curious about what this law does for Kelin. If you are Kelin and you are the victim of abuse, who knows, domestic rape, certainly abuse at home, do these laws contain something that protects these young women?
Yeah, the answer stems from the previous question. Once we have laws, we also need to provide the law enforcement. And this is the most difficult part of this process. But as I've mentioned before, I think that the approval of this law is a huge blow against those traditional norms, which are dominating in our society. And, those law enforcement bodies, local law enforcement bodies, they are all part of that society. So that it depends a lot on their professionalism and on their approach. And I think what we need is a very, very comprehensive approach. So we need a strategy and implementation of the standard operating procedures for which I'm advocating for a long time. So we need to have, a coordination among the all the relevant bodies and agencies and ministries, so that they need to work as a solid mechanism. So they need to react and to respond and try to prevent the situations of violence. I think in our society, there are lots of problems in terms of law enforcement, because the informal practices, they are still dominating. So people prefer to go for informal practices rather than to simply follow the laws and the legal procedures. And this is a problem. So the first problem I think we are going to face is if or whether a woman killing or like, you know, it's very, I think that simplifying things like putting or as labeling women as just killing, let's say women in families, whether they go to report about violence. Once they report, do we have a system of response according to those laws? And I think that we need several years to make these laws really work. But this is a process. And I think that the message the state is now sending to criminals and to rapists, to perpetrators, is that the government is not going to tolerate violence. And that's that's an achievement. So I think that this message should be and must be applied in reality. So the system should work. And I think it's a huge work, again, a joint one, with the civil society, with the government agencies, with international organizations. And we need to train the law enforcement body staff. We need to train the healthcare system. We need to train the social adaptation. And actually, we need to talk about the rehabilitation of victims of violence, of any kind of violence, because this system is actually lagging behind. So when we talk about the rehabilitation, then we need to, you know, to make it, again, comprehensive and systemic. So there shouldn't, you know, I think the problem now and the problem in the good side is also that media is now vocal. We're talking about that. We are covering those issues. We are speaking about them. But this should not be like that. I mean, like, yes, it's good that media is talking, but we need to make it a system, a mechanism, not just because media is talking, but the reaction should be automatic. So if there is a case of violence, all the relevant agencies have to deliver their tasks. And that should become a systemic one.
Okay, thank you. And we've reached the halfway point in our discussion. So it's time for me to remind that this is the Mejlis podcast, Radio for Europe, Radio Liberty's current affairs talk show focusing on Central Asia. I'm Bruce Pannier, host of the Mejlis and author of the weekly Central Asia in Focus newsletter. We're talking about Uzbekistan's draft bill criminalizing domestic violence and strengthening protection that now awaits the president's signature to become law. And joining me to discuss this are three women who played a leading role in seeing the law passed, or at least get this far. Dilfuza Kurolova, a human rights lawyer and activist for gender equality in Uzbekistan. Irina Matvienko, gender expert, feminist activist, and founder of Nemolchi.uz, an organization dedicated to ending gender violence and promoting gender equality. Nazima Davletova, chairperson of Uzbekistan's Mass Media Foundation and consultant on public and social sector. And thank you all for being here again. You know, so let's pick this up because the social aspect, of course, is going to be really key to this. The law, it's great that the law is on paper, but of course, we've discussed some of the problems they have with gender inequality and violence in the past on this program. And we know that there's a lot of social pressure to solve problems, even when it involves violence, outside the legal system as much as possible. Irina, how much of a challenge has it been for Nemolchi.uz, for instance, in your work and for others to try to change the thinking of society so that the law actually is something that people go to resolve their problems rather than trying to just take the punishment and stay at home, as maybe their neighbors or even family members are telling them to do?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's quite difficult and long-term work to change people's behavior, maybe 10 or 20 years at least. And I'm not sure that we have changed the perception of decision makers when we try to explain and promote our norms, our laws. But at least, of course, we could use international standards, we could use cases, argumentation, etc., just to explain them why we need these changes. But in fact, you know that implementation of the law is a very important process too. And for example, of course, we provided an article on domestic violence. But how many women will complain, will report to their husbands? We have maybe spent years to explain them that they have to do it, that they have to work, for example, they have to study, just to be sure in their future, just not being dependent on their husband. So I think it just maybe start of our work, and we need to promote more women independence, women empowerment, and etc.
Okay, thank you. Dilfuza, how about, you've been working on this, helping with this bill for a long time, and in doing work on gender equality even before that. How much of a challenge was it for you when you started working on this bill and working together to try to craft something that addressed as many of the important issues as possible for this law?
Well, as colleagues mentioned, Nazima and Irina, of course, it takes a lot of time to change. And I think here, what I have to say, in my humble opinion, is that government has to have a trust and a dialogue with civil society and activists. I think here, with this cooperation between government and civil society and activists, this mindset change can go faster. Rather than it will be done separately by the government and by civil society. Of course, I started a longer ago, but I see that even educated women, for example, they graduated universities, they still do not know their rights. And for example, today I received another complaint saying that they address to everywhere, demanding for their rights in terms of domestic violence, but nothing could happen. And they could not even claim for their rights and prosecutor or Minister of Internal Affairs. They try to reconcile families. And I think this institution of reconciliation is something that is really terribly driven by a very conservative part of the society. And I hope that this will be reflected in the law as well, because we have this Article 66.1 in the Criminal Code, which allows actually any victim or anyone who submitted the case to the court to get rid of or take it off. And I think this is the worst thing when victims know by default that they don't have a justice, they don't have access to justice, or there is no trust to the system. Perhaps, as Irina mentioned, people will not even go to claim their rights, because by default they will understand that, okay, if I go there, I will be made or forced to take it off, and the law allows it. And if you look to the more developed countries, let's say European countries, or for example, last year I was in Israel, even there, if the victim submits the case to the court on domestic violence, even if she comes and say, no, we are happily ever family, the court will never end the case. They will review it after the trial. Court may decide that the family violence or domestic violence is not taking place, or make some punishment or make some decision. So the case will never be stopped. And now this reconciliation institution is really much putting a threat to the laws, because even if you have very strong laws, even if we pushed for criminalization of domestic violence, we pushed for protection of children from the violence, but then if you have the reconciliation clause, of course you will have, first of all, corruption schemes, and then risks. The second, you will also have this ability to force victims to take it off. And the third, you will have a social pressure. And then the victim, in most cases, they will say, okay, I don't want to be in trouble, so I better not to go there. Or if I go, I have a right to take it off. And I think this institution is very deeply rooted. And one of the things that I really struggle, and together with all other members of the working group, we tried, along with other articles, to push the demolition or to take it off any sexualized violence crimes in reconciliation cases.
Well, thank you very much. Nazima, you are the chairperson of the Mass Media Foundation. Are you running any special campaigns, you know, to educate the public on these laws or the need for these laws?
Yeah. Actually, we have started that campaign in December last year. We have started with a conference, and we talked about the needs to change the laws and in changing the social norms via media. So media is a, you know, good instrument to change the social norms, and it's the most effective one. And as a part of that campaign, we organized an action with the Minister of Transport in the underground. So we have put banners depicting the national decoration of ICAT with the voices of women that are defined as the decoration of ICAT. So we made the voices of women calling for help in Equalizer, and we put it in the form of a card. So that was a part of, you know, art project that was aimed at raising awareness about violence. And, you know, when you see those pictures, you should feel that and you should hear the voices of women that are calling for help. And we need to sensitize this problem. Another one was our video where we tried to engage men to become more gender sensitive. They've been reading the personalized stories of women victims of domestic violence. And actually, you know, the reactions of those men who were reading those stories, they were celebrities, they were sportsmen, they were from public sector, they were politicians and journalists, really, you know, popular one. And when they were reading those stories, they were just crying. And I think that this is something that we need to show and to demonstrate to the broader audience, and that men can also be very empathetic. And when, you know, they see their fans see those stories from the mouth of their, you know, celebrities, their favorite celebrities and their role models, they will approach gender-based violence in a more sensitive way. So that was one of our, you know, messages. Another great achievement of our foundation is that we wrote a manual for journalists and bloggers, and we are going to announce it soon. We have uploaded this manual on more gender-sensitive coverage in media. We have uploaded in our website, so we're going to announce it soon. And this is also a very important part of our work, how the journalists and bloggers should cover the issues of gender, of women empowerment, and how to represent female image in cinematography, and how not to sexualize the image of women, and how not to justify the discrimination and violence against women. So it's going to be a very good one, you know, but the language, the manual is written is very like light. So it's very easy to understand. So it can be used not only by, you know, by the journalists and bloggers, but also by people that actually engage in any campaigns in social media.
You know, if I just one thing for the benefit of our audience, if you want to give tell the audience where your website is so they can see all this.
Yeah, it's massmedia.us.
Okay, great. Thank you. And Dilfuza, I'll get to you because I know that you have an appointment that you got to go to. And thank you very much for being here. You know, two things. One, we're getting to the end. So any last comments or thoughts that you want to make, now is your chance to do it. But I'm also curious to know what when you were getting this legislation together and you were working to get the wording right, to get it into to the government's attention, to get it through Parliament and everything, what did you find? What was surprising to you? What was easier than you thought it was going to be? And what was more difficult than you thought it was going to be?
Thank you so much. I think for me, it was quite an experience. It's a very interesting experience, I would say, and stressful and exhausting. But I think it was one of the best experiences. Why? Because of the two things. One, I met wonderful women that we I call them as a friends, like Irina, her team. There were Safinas, Nazima, and the rest of the people, Lailoa, for example. We became like a very good team. And I think this practice or this group made us to make a coalition. Yeah. So I can call it as a coalition because we didn't work before, but now we had to work together just to push common things forward and for the better benefit. And it's much easier and faster if we can collaborate and work together. The second thing for me, it was surprising that actually government tried to listen to us. Of course, this fight was very stressful. It was draining. It was exhausting. And it was even sometimes like I came up and I was like almost crying. But at the same time, I think this is a great, you know, time when government actually included all of us to the group as a, you know, independent expert, as an activist, as a journalist. And then we can talk to them in very equal opinion. Of course, not all of our argumentations were considered, but at least we could sit together. We could try to convince them, and I think it also pushed things forward. And then it was considered by very high level politicians and decision makers. What surprised me, or what actually made me sad, that these comments by participants, especially decision makers, some of the decision makers, for me it was like very blow-minding. And sometimes I thought like, this is not real. This is a movie, or this is like something that cannot be happening, because irrational, absolutely not logical argumentations or counter-argumentation provided by some of the people were just honestly frightening me, because they are taking very high-level positions, and it's really scary when such people are decision makers. But overall, of course, by the help of many, many people, we could push at least 2/3 of our recommendations. And hopefully, I still have a hope that all recommendations will be considered, and I'm still in a positive side. But I'm really thankful for this opportunity to get to know, first of all, these good friends of mine that I think we will keep in touch for a longer time. Thank you.
Good. Thank you very much. Irina, same. If there's anything that you wanted to say that you haven't had a chance to say, please feel free to do so. And also, I'm curious about what were you surprised at? What was easier than you thought, and what was harder, than more difficult than you thought, about getting this legislation as far as it has progressed?
Well, I cannot. I'm totally agree with Dilfuza regarding our coalition, like a grassroots female coalition. And we have a small group, Telegram group, and we named it as Lubimki Senata. Dilfuza, how can we translate it?
I think it's like beloved by Senate.
Beloved by Senate. Okay. Yes, but I discovered new sides of character of Dilfuza, of Safinas. For me, it was very surprising that Lailo from General Prosecutor's Office joined us and fight together with us for these amendments. So it was really surprising, because what I mentioned, that government, okay, state officials, they looked at us as oppositioners, but Lailo stayed together with us, and for me it's very important. And I understand she became maybe an example that state employers, they also support us. Also, I was very disappointed that all NGOs which participated in our working group, they were silent and passive. So it was really disappointed, and I understood that when our government invites NGOs as civil society representatives in different working groups, they just sit and sleep or keep silence, and they don't fight for any laws, for any amendments. And that's why I think it's very important to include not NGOs, but civil society, civil activists in such groups, because I think this law is a victory of independent activists, not an NGOs.
Okay, great. Thank you. Thank you very much. Okay, and Nazima, I guess you get the final word. And once again, if there's something that I missed that you want to say, please feel free to do so at this time. I do want to know what you were surprised about during this process, both positive and negative.
Okay, so I do agree with Irina and Dilfuza. So, you know, I don't think that there was something that really surprised me. I mean, what I am proud of is that female solidarity that we had. So I'm really proud of the team of activists and in this working group. And I do agree that there were lawyers from the general prosecutor's office that were really brilliant. And their support was really huge, you know, because they work as practitioners. So they see the reality and they were very empathetic. So I'm really proud of that female solidarity that we had. And I'm really grateful for that. And that was the momentum when with the joint efforts, we had this achievement all together. And another positive thing was that maybe this thing surprised me positively. But this wasn't a surprise, but a thing that made me really happy. We had a support from the government as well. We had the resistance, but we had also that support. So I felt the support of Saida Mirziyoyeva, which had, you know, powerful voice, and she was really advocating for all these amendments, and she stood strong with us. And of course, you know, there were people from the system that supported us. So that really makes me happy, because I think without their support, it would be really hard to get to the point. And I think that, you know, if this has happened, if this achievement is there, it means that our society is transforming. And this really makes me more positive and optimistic about, you know, the perspectives of the women empowerment and the protection of children's rights.
Okay, great. Thank you. Thank you very much. You know, and really my congratulations to all of you, and nothing but respect for you and the work you've been doing. I think it's fantastic. So thank you, Irina, Nazima, and Dilfuza for being on the program. I'm looking forward to a future program where we can talk about new milestones that you all have reached. And of course, a big thank you to Nathan Shoemaker, our Mejlis podcast producer in Washington, D.C. And a reminder, you can subscribe to the Mejlis podcast or the Central Asia in Focus newsletter by visiting Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's website at rfarl.org. Thank you very much. We'll be back next week. Bye-bye.